Welcome to Twos Talk with Tosh, Dino, and Donnie.
Fellas, welcome back. Another cast.
Kind of a weird one, though. Hey, bud.
It's a little weird. We have only one half of the dynamic duo in the studio with us. Tosh, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, buddy.
Good to have you here.
Great to be here.
How was your travel in?
Not too bad. Going to Edmonton on my way back, right? And I know this is going to be 2 weeks late, but a heck of a snowstorm happening right now. So might be stuck in Lloyd tonight. Not quite sure. But I'm not stuck in my bunker in Regina. So that's probably a bonus too, right?
Good intro for Dino. Dino, how is life in the bunker?
That was under a minute the first day.
Yeah, no, we're 41 seconds. Yeah, there it is.
It wasn't a shot. No, it was a factoid.
Oh, it was a factoid, all right. Yeah, I'll factoid you in a minute. Yeah. It's great. Yeah, loving life. Just looking out the window, it's, you know, the flakes are starting to fall. It's supposed to be a wind warning and all sorts of other fun stuff here today. So,
well, if what's happening in Lloyd is any indication, it's going to get real windy. And we've had snow since about 3 this morning, so it's
Coming our way.
Yeah, and Tosh will bring it with him, which would be nice.
Well, on the way back from Edmonton, because that's where we were to finish up our practices and some of the winter training that was postponed due to COVID, there was 5-6 semis in the ditch. Yeah, so it was pretty bad. It's not good.
And let's be clear, the Highway 16 from Lloyd Edmonton is a fairly straight shot, not a lot going on there.
Pretty
so if you hit the ditch, you got to really try hard.
Yeah, you got to work at it.
Yeah, you do. Okay, so Dino, you're good, you said.
Yeah.
Glad to hear you're safe.
Ready
I know.
To get at her.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you, bud. Really excited. We've got another great guest. I think we've had nothing but great guests, but a guy that you've coached with before and are coaching with again, Mr. Doug Allen. Welcome to the cast.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So, Doug, just for the listeners out there, why don't you tell everyone where you are and how the weather is?
Well, I'm in the Okanagan in BC, and it's supposed to hit 16 tomorrow, so and be sunny. So I don't want to rub it in, but it sounds like you guys have got a little bit of a miserable time in front of you. So just when you're thinking about it, just think about how warm I am.
Yeah, that's all I can think about. I can't stop thinking about it. We'll get to 16 in probably May, so that'll be fun. In 60 days or so, we'll get that. Yeah, are you golfing, or what are you doing in this great weather?
No, actually, I'm just I have my U16 girls team that I coach here in the Okanagan, and they practice 3 days a week, so they're outside, and they're just enjoying it too. So that's great.
Practicing outside, wouldn't that be something?
Well, we could have been practicing outside had this not hit. It was really nice. Now it's supposed to be what, 2 days from now? I know this is 2 weeks from now, but 2 days from now it's supposed to be 15 again.
Yeah, they say. So hopefully that lasts for more than 48 hours. That'd be awesome. Maybe we'll get some dry diamonds.
So 2 days. Yeah, we usually get Kelowna's weather. It's just delayed.
Yeah, we get it for about a week. Yeah.
Yeah, in July.
And I know we really enjoy it when we get it too.
For
it's
sure.
awesome. Yeah. So, Doug, big appointment for you. So you got your head coach of the U23 men's team. Who's on your staff? I'm going to lead you into that.
We've added, obviously, Dean. Dean's one of the assistant coaches, and Mark Quinn has joined us as an assistant coach as well. So really excited about having those two guys with me this summer and for the next couple of years to work to put this team together and go for the gold in Argentina.
Argentina, beautiful spot to go play ball. I'm sure it's exciting for you guys. How many BC guys you got on this in your pool so far?
Well, we've just done the expression of interest for the athletes. So right now the athletes are going out and they're sending in their information. So we're just kind of compiling that right now. From BC, I don't expect there to be many guys coming out to sign up for it. I really don't know from the U23 age group. I had a better handle on the 2000s and later, but from there I don't really know from the 98s to 99. So I'm hoping that we'll be pleasantly surprised. But I'm expecting a few guys to be out looking to show some interest.
Well, can you walk us through the process of how this all goes from start? I guess because we've just started, right? So next year in Argentina, 12 teams, you're ranked fourth currently. What's the process look like from now until you guys get to Argentina?
So right now we've just selected the coaches, and we're out now doing an expression of interest from the athletes, so we can determine where we're going to be holding our camps, the ID camps. From there, over the course of the next few weeks, I'll be meeting with the coaches to talk a little bit more about the plans and who's going to attend which camps and where we're going to be holding the camps. From there, we're going to be deciding as a staff where we would like to where we'd like to kind of establish the camp for this fall prior to us heading out. So there's a bunch of things in the air right now, but the idea is at this point is that we're traveling to Colombia for a qualifier. Should the COVID restrictions ease, we don't know what's going to happen there, but the goal is to do that. So the next couple months are going to be really busy for us to be able to put together the plan and work with Softball Canada to get the approvals and get everything set up there. So a little bit of work to do yet, so I can before I can really outline really what it's going to look like, but that's roughly where we are.
Well, you're lucky you got Dino on staff. Him and Tosh have been working a jigsaw puzzle for the last 6 months every week trying to get logistics down. Like, I think Dino's probably is a pro at it now, Dino. And that's a plus for you, Dean.
Yeah, I do a lot of that. That's really my big job, is doing all the fitting, you know, the people into the boxes. And Taj is losing his mind right now because he does all the math. And he's not good at math, so let's figure out how that's going.
Well, I was going to make a comment. It wasn't really a cut down. This is kind of a weird thing. What's really cool here, Donnie, is you and I are basically hosting this thing right now. Because normally Dino is involved in questions and stuff too. But he knows all the answers.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just kind of sitting there watching Dougie do all the talking, right?
Yeah.
Much like his staff is going to be. Dougie's going to do all the work, and Dino's just going to sit there and, you know, look good, right?
Dino just smile and nod, bud. When in doubt, smile and nod.
But I do have a comment, Dougie. And it's question, comment, whatever. But it's kind of neat the way – I think adding the 23 boys is a great progression, obviously, because, you know, that I don't remember, and we've talked about this before on the cast, there wasn't a lot of guys that came out of the junior program during our tenure with the national team that actually made the senior team. There was a huge jump there from junior to senior men's, and whether guys didn't play anymore or, you know, got to senior A, didn't, you know, what weren't able to get it done, whatever the reason being. But I think now this is a two-step process now for these kids that, you know, come out of 18, then into 23, and then hopefully are going to the national team. But the other thing that's really interesting too, whether it was, you know, done on purpose or not, you've got a really neat coaching progression as well, right? So you got Mark on, who's the head coach of the 18 team. He's on your staff. You're on the senior staff. I think there's a real opportunity for you guys to put together a program where everybody's singing from the same song sheet. And I'm not sure that has always been in place. I know Smitty has tried to do that, obviously, with on the women's side. And I think now there's a real cool progression going through in the senior men's side. So I think it's going to be a huge benefit to the men's game in this country for sure.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think the opportunity is there for the athletes to be able to be seen by the men's team and to be able to, you know, basically take that next step up. A lot of times we, you know, the guys get kind of lost whether they're going to play senior or not. This opportunity to know that the national team is potentially a little bit closer, and the senior guys are also going to see some of these younger guys, and they're potentially going to be able to, you know, hand select them to be able to join some of their other senior teams. So. Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Well, and I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you, if you need a guy to hit a couple ground balls here and there, I'm sure Tosh and I would both volunteer to do some of the grunt work so you guys can just observe. Tosh and I work very well from the right and left side both, if you're looking for any kind of a splash there. We just so you know.
Ground ball regatta, oh, it's baby. Just a ground ball regatta.
It's just a machine, just well-oiled, just ground ball after ground ball. Good hops, you know, in-betweeners. You've got to get everyone working, right?
That's basically my career.
Yeah.
Ground ball, so Dougie, Donnie's got no shame, eh?
Oh, not
just
a bit.
So you know.
No, I.
Like, if you haven't listened to all the podcasts. Yeah.
No, I'm not above begging. I'm certainly not below it. I'll do what I need to do. I'm just a guy trying to make his way, you know.
He's already got the commitment from Johnny Stewart that if the men's team ever ever has a camp in Vegas, he's the first invite.
And Mark Smith said the same thing. So I'm throwing chum out there, boys. I'm trying to get a bite, and if you know, it's a numbers game.
Did you get your 1983 national team jacket that was promised to you as well?
Yeah, it hasn't come. With all the mail issues, I'm sure it's on its way. I know he's a man of his word, so I'm not worried about that. But I mean, obviously, there's a lot to go into. Obviously, we talked a little bit about. You know, you haven't picked a place to have your camp yet, but when that all starts going, just let Tosh and I know if you need to, especially as you first meet these players. If you want to observe, we'll be there to help.
Absolutely. Yeah, we want their first contact to be you two clowns.
If they can't handle us at our best, then they certainly can't handle you guys. You know what I mean? We're the buffer. We're like the guys that come on the stage before the main act and just warm everybody up, you know?
I'm feeling a little uncomfortable right now because I'm getting wrapped into something here that I'm not real comfortable with.
Oh, you don't want to hit your wagon, your horse to my wagon. I see. That's fair. Fair enough.
Dino's coming off way too smart right now on this podcast, and I'm not liking it at all. So, Dougie,
if I could put my feet up right now, I would.
Dougie, I guess from you know the 100,000 foot perch where the national team is to where. You know, the men's game kind of is in Canada. Looking big picture here, what do you see as a huge benefit to adding, you know, we've talked a little bit about maybe that stepping stone, but is there maybe an opportunity to start to promote the men's game at the younger level where now these kids have an opportunity to do something as well as, you know, the junior team, obviously, but an opportunity to keep going through the program. Do you think that's going to help the men's game develop? In maybe some places it's not really strong right now?
Well, I certainly hope so. I think the plan is to see the game grow. I mean, from our perspective, you know, we've seen it fall off so drastically. I was just talking with a fellow down at the park the other day, an older gentleman. He was telling me about, you know, how many leagues there were in the Lower Mainland and Victoria, and every community had a league, and we don't see that anymore. We're lucky to see a team. When I was with Softball BC with the men's team, we were talking about how do we grow the game and how do we create a little bit of interest, furthermore to add more players. And what happened was, I started to see some growth here and there. But it's really kind of, it's so difficult to predict it because the way that the game has evolved, it's evolved into such a specialized, game at the senior level. And it was kind of falling off at the grassroots level, but I'm starting to see a little bit more of that. And especially in BC, I was actually pleasantly surprised to see a lot of the younger the kids up in Prince George and whatnot really starting to develop and come along. Chad Goskeeper and Randy Potskin, two guys you probably played a lot. They've been doing a great job up there. Terrace, BC, is probably one of the biggest hotbeds you'll see for softball, around 300 registrations. So there is some communities that are still kind of carrying it on, and we're hoping that the connection to the age groups will allow the athletes to see that opportunity. So I'm really hopeful that can be achieved with this program as well.
Randy's son actually played with us at ISCs last when we were in Green Bay, and it was Circle Tap, sorry. And he is a phenomenal, and I think he's out of the age, but that kid is going to be phenomenal. Nicky Potskin is an unreal athlete. So we're happy to have that guy, and he's in the Prince George area too. So you're right. Is Giesbrecht in Terrace? Is that where he is?
Which, Robbie?
Giesbrecht? No.
I thought I saw
there's a young Giesbrecht kid in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I saw that on the list when I was looking at
Robbie, and I'm like,
he's
a little too old for that.
he won't make it. Hey,
although he kept himself pretty good shape. You never know. You never know. Yeah.
So let's, if we can, jump in our 83 DeLorean, go back in time a bit, Doug, and talk about your start in the game, where you played, how you got into coaching. Let's start at the very beginning, shall we?
Sure. I was starting Campbell River when I was young, first started out playing softball. I played against Corey Giroux, was playing in the league there when I was a kid. And I'll never forget when he was able to pitch from a couple feet closer. And he could just fire it then. So as a kid starting out, I was like, do I really want to play this game? Because this young guy could just fire it. So we grew up playing there. And in Campbell River, it was the sport to play. So lots of guys came out of there, you know, from the younger years. And then as we moved on, we were playing teams like Cordova Bay and Rick Smith, was pitching for them. And man, did we used to beat their team so bad because Rick was like the hardest thrower ever, but nobody could catch him. So our coach used to say to us, say, swing at the third strike and start watch the snowball fight start. And we as kids would just run around the bases. So, you know, Ricky doing his sort of stuff. So it was pretty good. But obviously those guys got quite a bit better as they got older. And for me, then I moved up to after I'd left Campbell River, I moved up to Whistler and started playing some. I was really pleasantly surprised to find a couple ball teams up there. And we played in the Squamish League, and that's where I met John Stewart. And a really funny story, when I met John Stewart, I first met him, and I didn't know John for a second. I seen him with his wife, and she had a black eye one time. And I was like, oh, I don't like this guy. I didn't know what was going on, but I was like, you know, and she played ball, right?
Rumors.
So immediately I judged him, so I'm comfortable saying that. So anyway, that winter... John and I, we played in this, there was a group of guys that played hockey, and it was for people that were really bad at hockey, and John and I are on these opposite teams, and we almost get in a scrap on the ice. Like, we're the biggest yard sale of hopeless hockey players between the two of us. We couldn't play worth a damn, and we couldn't even stand up to try to fight each other on the ice because it was a mess. So then afterwards, we shared some choice words with each other, you know, from there,
if I could skate, I would just kill you, man.
Exactly. So from there, John and I played ball against each other in the Howe Sound Men's Basketball League, and you know, it was great. It was a great league, and we started to play with John after our team in Worcester kind of folded, and then we became really good friends. And one of the things that I learned about playing ball with John was. Doesn't matter how, what the situation, we're going to run through that wall. And it didn't matter who we were playing. If it got too tight, or if it got too tough, it was getting a little bit more physical. John had no problem playing a little bit physical. So I played in the Halcyon Men's League and then moved down to the coast to play with it was the South Hill Giants and the Vancouver Greyhawks. And I played with them for a few years. I played in the Moody Park League, and that's where I think where I first played against Dean. I'll never forget my funny story about playing against Dean was there was a time when there's a bunch of the Dominican guys had defected into, they came up on a tour and they had played, and I think Dean might have been playing with the Maralomas, and there was a few of the Dominican guys, and I was pitching against them, it might have been extra innings or something, and Dean comes out to bat, and he's already hit a couple home runs off me. So John says, Doug, walk him. So, of course, I'm trying to do an intentional walk, and the second pitch I threw, and Dean hit over the fence. It was supposed to be 2 feet outside, but he reached out and hit it over the fence. So I learned how to intentionally walk somebody after that.
Now you just say it.
Hey, Dean.
Exactly.
Dean, just a heads up. Don't you like the ball low and out there?
Well, maybe not out, but yeah, I look for it. I was going to mention, though, now that you got to know Johnny a little bit, it's kind of ironic that, you know, his wife had a black eye, because he's usually one getting the black eyes, not giving them, right? So
did you get the story on
that? Kind of the case.
Did you get the story on the black eye? Was it a volleyball incident, or what are we talking?
No, it was. She was a fastball player too, and she got one off the ground in the face. But yeah, but it was. But immediately, right away, I had to go to the point because I didn't like him anyway. So I decided to make him even more of a villain and just think maybe.
Well, it's easier to draw your own conclusions than get the actual story. Yeah, I agree.
Let's just quell that rumor right there.
Yeah.
We'll just stop talking about that.
Right, yeah.
No, and then so then from there I kept playing and I finished off playing when I was 42. I finished off playing with Portland, I think it was. I wasn't able to play a lot of the IAC tournaments and the Canadians because my job at the time was in the water department, and my boss always took the primary time off, so I wasn't able to travel with the Grey Sox or the other teams to the Nationals because my boss was always on holiday, so I was always kind of stuck at work at that time. But I did finally get to one, and I got to a National in 2000 or Canadians in 2009, and that was when I really realized how honest John was with me, because I was pulling my gear out of the bag and I pulled my glove out and he said, "You're not going to need that." And I was like, "Well, okay." So how do you really feel, John? it was great. I was able to play a little bit at the senior level with those teams, but wasn't able to always get to the ISCs every year. I think I played in 2007 at the ISCs when we finished, I think, the Great Sox. We made it finish seventh. I was always able to go to some of the NAFA stuff with my Squamish team. So whether it was in Hutchinson or Salt Lake or you know, the NAFA events. But yeah, I was able to do that quite a bit. And then actually in 2005, I had shoulder surgery, so that kind of knocked me off the playing, took me out of playing for a while. I actually came back a little bit and pitched a little bit, but then it was done for that, and then the pain just became too much to keep playing. So that's when I kind of jumped into more coaching, started thinking about coaching. And but I got a funny story. It was in 2009 at that national when John said to me, he said, "Doug, you're not, you know, you don't need your gloves." Well, we were playing St. Thomas that night at the feature game on the Saturday night, and I think Tyson Barkman was there pitching for us because we were just waiting for, I think we had Musler and somebody else coming in, and so we're down 6-1 or 7-1 or something like this in the first inning. John says, "Doug, can you warm up?" And I said, "John, I haven't pitched since 2005 before surgery." He goes, "That's okay. Just see if you can get this over with, you know, kind of get us out of here. So eat a couple innings up." So I'm like, really? So I throw a few pitches down the side, and I said, "Okay, I'm ready to go." And Craig Horswell, I don't know if you know Craig Horswell.
Yeah, he's really well.
So I call him out, and Schellenberg and a few of the other guys are there in the infield, Mace and stuff. I said, "Okay, guys, listen. I said, I don't want to die in front of this many people." So I said, "Horsey," said, "don't call anything down the middle." So first inning, I get out of it, right? So the guys are kind of laughing into their gloves. They're just like chuckling to themselves. They're like, "Oh, my God, we can't believe you didn't give up a run the first inning." Second inning, nobody gets a run. Third inning, nobody gets a run. By the, I think it's about the sixth inning, I think Elsie hit a walk-off shot off me. So they won. But I walked out of there going, "Oh, my God, I didn't die, and I'm never pitching again." At that point, I was 39, and I was like, okay, it didn't hurt too bad. But I was like, "No, I'm not doing it."
Well, that kind of backfired because obviously Johnny Stewart was looking for that game to end a lot sooner than that.
Yeah, was a man. He'd always felt pretty honest.
That's good for you.
That was you were always a battler, Doug. Like I remember back in those days. I mean, you didn't see too many knuckleballs, but I do recall you would throw the old knuckleball out there every once in a while too. Did you not?
Just every once in a while, when guys were hitting everything, I was like, "Okay, there's nothing else to throw here."
Yeah, no, I always remembered though. You were always a gamer, a great hitter too, and I always had to watch you coming up because you know that's just. But that was a fun time when, you know, a lot of those guys coming from Squamish. I think there was. I mean, there's. I don't want to start naming guys, but because I can't remember them. Brad Zolmar, here I go again. There was how many of those guys that went, they ended up playing in that, you know, the lower mainland leagues and but a lot of them came from that area. Right. So even our, talking to Johnny there a little bit, he was involved at some point, right?
Yeah. John Stewart. I mean, it was, Bob Versluis,
Bobby.
Yeah. Rich Tetzloff. Yeah. There was a few guys that were out of there they're just exceptional players. And I mean, Kevin, I was really just, I mean, Kevin's my brother-in-law. So I used to hear about it at dinner. So I go over there and he was just a young guy coming up. Yeah. So I used to have to play, you know, play against him when he was just a kid. And I remember he was such a spaz. He was such a spaz. I used to be able to love going over for dinner at their house and just poke him. Just poke him a little. But then obviously he got way better and then he was just poking me every time.
He's a classic.
Going back, it's not an easy conversation to have with a player that you know you're in a game that you need to get a guy in to turn it over and get out of the game. I've had to do that myself, had to mop up a few games. And it's you're out there trying your hardest, but you, at the end of the day, you're out there just to give your other guy a break and hopefully, like you said, not die because these guys are hitting absolute missiles off everybody else. So it's not ideal for sure. Talk about some of the teammates you had with that Grey Sox team, because I'm sure we've had a couple on and I've played with a couple of them for sure, and it's nice to hear the names. Was Underhill on that team?
Oh, yeah. Mickey was on the team. I played with the late Sean Cameron was on the team. Great guy, gamer. Scott Newitt, Kevin Schellenberg, Derek Mason. There was quite a few guys. I mean, you know, it was they continued on to the Giants. Most of those guys, whether it's Todd Johnston,
was Trevor Johnston on that team? Is that who you meant?
Trevor.
Yeah,
Trevor?
I'm sorry, Trevor Johnston. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then even with the Hill, there was, you know, it was down in that time, it was Glenn Ormsby. Dwayne Lefferson was down in there at that time. Don Walden was a pitcher. Lindsay Gasparini.
Oh, wow.
I remember there was a guy they brought in from New Zealand, Kyle Smith, who plays for the Hill. There's a bunch of guys. It goes on forever. I mean, the list of guys that have been through there. So, but some of the teammates at the Grey Sox, yeah, there were some great ones there. Chris Wavrick, a diehard softball player.
He's a beauty.
You know, he's a beauty. Just loves the game more than anything. And playing with Mason and against Mason. So, yeah, it was good.
Mason still smashes the ball. Jesus. Does Wave still puts that team into Kelowna, doesn't he, with the Giants? Is that him that runs that?
Yeah. Yeah, they usually have a team in the May Days tournament. I think the guys are kind of getting a little older, so they've been breaking up a little bit more. So it's less – I don't know if they did last year or not. No, I don't think they did.
Because my men's
– He brought a lot of guys in from all over.
Yeah, like when we were there –
just a group of guys he enjoyed playing with or against probably.
Yeah, like Podolicho is usually always there and guys like that. Like they usually get a – I think Shales was with them last time and just all-star guys. Just fantastic group of guys for sure.
Yeah.
Dougie, I appreciate you going. Sorry, Dougie. I appreciate you going through your list here and rattling off players that you actually did play against, probably in the year that you did play with them. Because normally, when Dino starts rattling off names, it's not even close, bud. So, what I guess is a little bit of a okay. So, Dino's going to be a fantastic, I assume, pitching coach. He won't be your infield coach. I'm telling you that right now. But anyways, he awesome asset, and you know I'm gonna pump his tires here a little bit later on. But the one thing you're gonna have to do is you cannot rely on any scouting information from him that happened 2 days prior to when you're asking him.
I write it down.
Really. Yeah, it's not. So Dougie, now you're going into the U23. Question about that team, kind of bringing it back to you know where you sit with that. Now correct me if I'm wrong, but a bunch of those kids, young men, I guess, that are eligible for the 23 probably played on the 18 team at one point, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what kind of – and I won't want to get into names or anything, but have you guys done maybe a quick survey or what's going on? I guess you're getting your information back from your athletes. Is there still a pretty good percentage of those guys that are still playing the game, or is this going to be and I know there's probably going to be some guys that, you know, have developed over the last couple of years that maybe weren't on that team, but do you think that's a bit of an advantage, maybe having a few of those guys still playing?
I think definitely guys that have been in the program before are going to bring some wisdom that they have from, you know, their experience overseas, playing with the national team. The other guys that have been playing, that have been maturing, that have developed since those initial camps, I expect that we're going to see some other talent that have been playing around with other teams as well. So I'm actually really I'm really looking forward to seeing the progression of some of the athletes. I did an evaluation camp with Jeff Ellsworth in PA, and I want to say, geez, maybe 16 or 17, lots of great athletes were there, lots of great hitters, and a lot of them didn't make the team, but you know, you just always wonder, like, you know, because some guys do develop a little bit later with their abilities, and I'm really excited to see what we're going to have in Canada, especially with guys that have maybe developed any maybe slapping skills or maybe some of their pitching skills or just maybe overall skills. I mean, just I think there's going to be a great opportunity for these young athletes to demonstrate some where they've come from and what they've been doing over the last few years.
Right, and I think it's a phenomenal age group to work with too, because you're going to have guys that maybe haven't quite got to that ISC level yet, but you're going to have guys that have been the ISC two or three times already. So, you know, you're going to have a wealth, I think, of experience at the senior A level. For sure. And then you got all these kids. I mean, they're still junior age, but what is it? Junior age now is 35, something. I don't know, whatever the junior age now is, but I know it's 23. It's a little older, but I think it's a real cool step to have that, because I think when we were coming up, you had the junior team and you came on a junior, there was only one place to go. Right. And it was sink or swim kind of at senior eight. Now, having said that, there was a lot more senior B around, a lot more, like you were saying, a lot more leagues to develop. Now there really isn't. Right. So either you're making that jump or you're not. But I think with the junior age going to 23, I think they get to stay together a little bit longer. And the hope is, and I'm talking probably more, you know, the Saskatoon area. I know that D-back team that has been going, Huddy's team there, that is Brooks and Scott Hudson have had forever. They've coached them all the way up. I know that group is talking about going senior A when they're done junior. So I think that's a huge positive step, because they'll add some pieces to that team. And then that's another team that stays in senior A and it doesn't just disband, right? So, I'm really excited for that age group, because I think you're going to have a lot of talent, and you're going to have a unique opportunity to be – it's kind of like, you know, you look at the junior team that on the female side, we always have kids that have maybe had 1 year of college experience, and the difference in development between that and the kids that haven't been there yet, I think is huge. And I think you're going to see the same thing with a lot of these kids that maybe have played at the senior A level, ISC level, that haven't. So, I think it's a real exciting age group for you guys to work with.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about your, now you're into coaching. Talk about how that came about, where you started, and how you got into coach with Dino and Whitehorse and with John Stewart, and now with your own group.
Sure. Well, I used to go out and coach with the Vancouver Giants when I retired from playing. The Giants used to ask me to come up and take on those all-star teams at the Kelowna tournament. So I would start by coaching them. When I say coaching, I mean standing at their base and watching them hit home runs. Because it really wasn't a lot of coaching to be done. I mean, those guys are just awesome. The one thing I was actually, I'd stepped back and I was more or less working with the kids. And I was living in, still in the Okanagan, but I'd taken a job in Grand Forks. And John had called me and asked me to, in 2015, to come out as a scout for the men's team in Saskatoon, the tournament there. And the reason that John had asked me to do that is just because of he was looking for something different for the team. And one of the things I was always able to kind of do when I was playing was I could always pick a pitcher. I mean, all the guys generally do it, but I could do it quickly, or most of the time, but not all the time. And when I could do it, it was usually pretty obvious. And I learned that because I guess I had so many tells, because I used to stand up when I was pitching. I was like, man, I give up a lot of home runs. I wonder why. And I kind of figured it out when I was a little older. I was like, oh, I must have had a tell.
Yeah.
And so you quickly learn from that stuff. And in 2015, we were able to put together quite a bit of information on the pitchers, and actually created a lot of fuss. I don't know if you heard the story, but one time when we were underneath the bleachers at the main diamond there, we had a table set up, and Softball Canada gave us, or I guess COD set us up at the table there. And so we were videoing, we were able to watch the games, and I was able to just sit and watch, and I was picking pitchers. And I think Todd McCullough and myself and Jimmy Kleimenhanger were sitting there, and we were just picking pitchers, and it was going great. And then the guys from Venezuela and Argentina came over with their, you know, that's when the selfie sticks were coming out. Mm-hmm. So they walked in behind us and they were trying to put the selfie sticks over to see if they could get pictures of my notes. Well, a little bit of a altercation started underneath the bleachers there. And there was a lot of tension between the Venezuelan team and us sitting there. They were just mad as hell at us. And that's when I really realized how, because I know that Argentina was doing a lot of it, and I know the Kiwis do a lot of it, but it really was a big part of the game for that. And just as that unfolded, I realized as a, you know, I didn't come in there with knowing that was going to be the case, but that was for me. That's how I kind of got involved with the national team, and then from there I was still scouting in 2017. When Dean came on, and Dean joined us in Whitehorse, and I'd known Dean a little bit, but one thing I did learn about Dean and Whitehorse was you can hear Dean snoring when you walk down the hall.
Amen, brother.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Come on. The digs aren't till the end of the show.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's not true, Dean, because we had one on you 40 seconds in.
That's
so
true. Yeah. That's Tosh. Yeah.
Generally not a guest early. But here we are. No, I agree. Going back to that picking in Saskatoon, someone must have given Mullally lots of good info because everything he hit went over the fence. Yeah. So you can take like partial credit for some of those dingers, I suppose, and you should.
I don't think that I had anything to do with him hitting. He would ask me what you got on this guy, and if I told him, the guy was just an amazing machine. You know, I didn't really talk to Steve that much when it came to that. He was just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, some guys don't need to be told much.
Not at all.
This altercation, is that where Johnny got his black eye?
No, it was so strange because I remember being there, and I can't remember who kind of started it, but somebody came up and, you know, push the selfie stick away, and then everything kind of started happening. And I remember something just unfolding there, and I was kind of a little bit in shock about it, you know, kind of because it seemed to be kind of a little bit of pushing, and then it was separated out right away. It was nothing to do with us. There was some other guys that kind of came in on it, but that was the time too. And there was a fellow from Argentina that was, I think he was with Argentina. He passed away during that tournament too, while the tournament was on. And
that's really?
the big fight event that happened too with the Brits.
Great Britain,
Great Britain and Argentina with Richie Haldane.
We talked to Richie about that actually, yeah. There was an incident, as he called it politely. There was a,
He didn't really get into it a whole lot though. You know, he didn't. Richie's I don't know if I.
Well, in Richie's defense, he said offline, he's like, "Hey, I got a wife and kids, and I don't need them hearing about the insanity." But
cat's out of the bag. Thanks, Donnie.
No, that's fair. Well, they could just as easily Google it themselves, Dean. It isn't like
I know.
But I think anyone who's seen it, it was he got out of hand pretty quick there. And having played with Rich for the last few years, if I'd like to be on his side because he's a big fella.
So Dougie, you know, you're talking about picking pitchers and that was kind of we've talked to, we've had Mark Sorensen on and we've had Marty Kernighan on and Marty had the famous black binder of all the pitchers and Mark had the same thing. And I think that was kind of the way it was back in the day when, you know, you were facing these guys, the real students of the game kept track of all that stuff. When you're picking pitchers, are you solely picking pitchers? Because anytime Dino gave up a home run, he blamed it on the catcher for giving up the pitch. So I'm just wondering, like, did you also look at the catchers? Because, I mean, Dino really believes that that's how he got picked, is the catchers. Obi's probably giving every pitch away, right?
Oh, what was it? There was about five, right?
Five catchers? Well, that one game. Yeah, that one game.
It's easy to figure out which one. you know, but you bring up the camera stuff there, Dougie. It, like, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it's definitely an issue. Like, you know, back in 2004, we had the big, you know, upheaval in New Zealand, and it was like, it was over, you know, whether people were picking pitches as far as picking catchers and signals and that kind of stuff. And and we've been, you know, we've talked enough about it over the years, and you know, whether it happened or not, I think we've got, you know, there's some pretty good people that have said that it didn't, you know, that people that we can trust. So, you know, whether it happened or whether it didn't, I kind of tend to think it didn't. But it does kind of tie into what you're talking about here in regards to, you know, sitting right behind the catcher with a video camera and being able to video players. If everybody can do it, then I don't see an issue with it. If only the host team or different, you know, organizations get to do it, or then I think you got an issue. I think everybody should kind of have the same playing field. And if you got a video, you video from, you know, from the stands or somewhere that everybody can do it. I don't know. My thoughts.
Well, they do that now. Like, you have to video. Like, if teams are doing scouting video, you can't actually be in center field. they usually have a fence. Like, I know on the female side anyways, like any worlds we've been at, Bolsey always sets up his camera, but he has to be off center. And I think that's so you can't pick catcher signals, whatever, what have you. But I also remember before 2009, and Dino, you'll remember this as well, we would receive, well, CDs, I guess.
Yeah, we would receive
CDs of all our at-bats, and Bolsey would be in the stands and or in center field, and he would be doing all our at-bats at the ISC or Moncton or any of the big tournaments that we were at. We'd always get these CDs. But we also got CDs.
You used to get a beta.
Yeah.
You had to hook the reels up.
That's what he comes back with, beta. Wow. So, but we also got video of every international pitcher that was at that tournament as well, right from behind the catcher. So we would be able to see delivery, and Bolsey would break it down. Okay, here's his rise ball, here's his drop ball, here's his change. So I know if we were doing it, other countries were definitely doing it. And of course, when you're at an ISC or you're at a, you know, Moncton, there's no rules, right? So I think I think the game changed in that because the teams closed the gap. So let's say you had your top four teams, your bottom four teams started closing the gap, that it wasn't just, you know, back in the day where Canada and New Zealand threw their gloves on the field and it all went their way. You know, other teams now are showing that development. And I think that just goes back to they're paying attention to stuff, right? And I think that's the state of the game now.
Well, there's a great song.
Absolutely. I mean,
go ahead. But I got a great song quote because I'm working at a rock station, so it's got to come out.
I was just going to say, like in 2015, when we were sitting there, that was at the end of the day, that was the rule. Like we weren't allowed to have a camera. But what they said was everybody gets to sit there, and whoever got there first. So it was fair. But I mean, it doesn't matter where you sit if you're going to pick a pitcher. I mean, if you watch Mark Sorensen does it, he's trying to get in the catcher's glove when he's standing on third base. I mean, he's looking in there. I mean, it's just what you do. I mean, every when you grew up. When I grew up playing ball, everybody that I'd work with, they say, if you're going to sit on the bench, you might as well see what the tendencies are for the catcher to call 3-1, 2-1.
Yeah.
What does the pitcher like to go to for their when they need a strike? I mean, as a hitter, it gives you a little bit of an advantage. But picking a pitcher should really only give you five extra swings in a game, five better swings, maybe, if you're going to do that, if the athletes want to know it. I mean, it's not something where you're going to pick a pitcher and it's over for them. I mean, it's one or two opportunities that you can make potentially capital.
Well, knowing what's coming, and you still have to hit it. It's not easy. But the song is by the Headstones, Tweeter and the Monkey Man, also done by Bob Dylan. Everything's legal as long as you don't get caught, you know? Everybody's doing it. It's just you have to be really careful about how you're, you know, either whether relaying signals or talking about it. Everybody's at this level is trying something, whether they're the second base, runner second base is relaying to the hitter. There's always something. But if it's obvious, that's where you get incidents, right?
Well, we're talking about just the offensive side of it. I think probably the defensive side of it is probably even more important, right? Like you're telling your own pitchers where there's no rules, we can be doing that at practice. We could be doing that at wherever, right? And giving our own pitchers feedback on what they're giving away and what they've got to do a little bit differently to mix some things up every once in a while.
Except for that one national team camp, right? And that's exactly what you're talking about here. So we're at a national team camp in Durham, so in Oshawa.
With Nuke Lelouch?
We're there with Oshawa, and Bob Bugslag is coaching then, and he's kind of running the camp, or he's one of the coaches at the camp. Terry was probably the head coach. And at the time, Musey was absolutely unhittable. That was in his unhittable phase, and we were looking for anything we could get. And remember, he used to load his cheek. He would take his tongue and stick it in his cheek, and you knew the spinner was coming, knew the rise ball was coming, right? Wow. So whatever that pick was, so we set it, and we're kind of whispering to each other, "Hey, I think we got a pick on Musey here." And then we all got to face him at nationals. I mean, the next international event isn't for 2 years, so why are we telling him now, right?
Yeah.
Till Bobby told him. And then that pick went away, and then he became unhittable again. Yeah. So it's just, you know, there's that competitive nature where, you know, I got to face this guy at the ISC. I got to face this guy at Canadians, and we'll be on Team Canada in a couple of years. So maybe we'll just let it slip here for a little bit.
Hey, Doug, you brought up a good point. I know we start talking to our hitters about it even with the twos is if we're doing live at bats and you're facing a pitcher, start talking about, hey, if they need a strike, what are they going to? Is it a spin? Is it a location? What is the pitch they need to throw for a strike? If you're standing off the side waiting for your turn to take a swing, there's no sense you making the same mistake the hitter that was just in there made, right? So you got there's always a role, whether you're in the hole, on the bench. You got to be watching for the patterns, right? So it's interesting that you say that we're trying to give this very national team level hitting experience. I think that's a very good endorsement. Thank you, Doug, for that.
Well, it's funny at a younger age, though, Donnie, like even with our teams, like, you know, we try to encourage, you know, especially the first however many hitters of the game to come back and let your next batter know what's going on. And that's part of it. And the girls are kind of getting there, but it's still the information that they're passing on isn't information that needs to be passed on yet.
No.
It's like, okay, she threw really hard on the outside. You know, that'll be something they'll say to somebody right in their ear before they go up to bat. Mm-hmm. So they've got the concept of, yeah, let's pass on the information. Yep. But the information we're passing on, we need to get better at that in our team.
Sure.
And especially even in, you know, our national team programs and stuff. I don't think you see that nearly as much. But at the younger ages, they're trying, but they just don't have the information to pass along yet.
Yeah, it's a vocabulary. It's an experience for sure. Because I know, like, at the senior at women's level, junior women's level, you know, it's a lot better than that. Our team sometimes is, how's it looking? The ball's yellow.
Fast.
Yeah, the ball's yellow.
Okay,
awesome.
She threw a fast one on the first pitch there, and then she threw a slow one on the second one. Yeah. Just watch for the slow one.
Watch the slow one. Yeah. But, yeah, no, and I think that's, yeah, for sure. I think, you know, we have, it's about vocabulary. It's about giving them that experience, so. Yeah,
and what they look for.
But the fact that they're starting to talk, I mean, yeah, it's got to get tighter, but now they're at least relaying something. It's not great information, but it's information.
Baby steps.
Yeah, that's right.
Baby steps.
So we actually have, I ran a hitting practice for, I coach the U19s here, Doug and Lloyd.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, sorry. Just a little plug for the liner program.
Wow.
But we did live at
What time is it? What time is it? That's the first time Donnie brought up the liners. What time is it?
47 minutes.
There you go.
But we did it. I did something similar, and I learned this straight from Dean and Razor and Tosh, was I would throw live in the first at bat, so six girls go through. The first at bat through, I only threw drop balls. That was it. So I pull them all in. I'm like, hey, what'd you guys notice for patterns? What spins did I throw? And one girl says, rise ball? I'm like, nope. Drop ball, yep. Anything else? You're like, I'm like, nope, nothing else, guys. So now I'm going to start mixing something else. So I threw a changeup, second pitch to every hitter. And after I pulled everyone in, hey, did you notice a pattern there? Well, we all saw a changeup. I'm like, you did, but when? So they're getting better. And then so the third at bat through was a rise ball, second pitch every time. So they started to notice. I want to give them very deliberate patterns so they can start passing it on. And I started getting hit pretty hard.
That's a good drill. I mean, you say you got it from us, but you're taking it one step level or further there. And I think we could even go further with that. You know, we can go through pitchers that have a sequence, pitchers, catchers that have a sequence. You know, and Dougie, you mentioned it earlier about knowing what pitchers throw on what counts. Well, we can kind of work through situational hitting and kind of know, you know, you get to 3-1, or, you know, they've always thrown that drop ball. That's what they're going to get. And then they can start expecting it and then understanding the lingo that we're actually telling them.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
that's a good point, Dean. Well,
on any given day, on any given day, Dean, you probably would have thrown, depending on the tournament, you were depending on, you know, that weekend, you had one pitch that was probably working better than any of them.
And no, he had one pitch. No, he had one pitch, Doug. He had one pitch. That was it. One pitch. Yeah, here it is. Hit it.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. I mean, it's going to, you know, and I think that as we get to travel again, you know, we definitely, you know, Razor and I were talking about in the vehicle today, we know our teams are really good, but we've got players in new positions that have never played a game in that position, right? And that's going to be the equalizer too. It's getting them an understanding of game pace and all that sort of stuff. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Dean, can I bring up your toe?
Oh my God.
Yeah, sure.
So as a bit of a follow-up to our ISC game we pulled at Donnie Barrels after team practice, it was about 2 weeks ago now, and Dean sent a photo to the group chat that his nail had fallen completely off. So if anyone's ever wondering if Dino's still a gamer, he threw so hard that night that his toenail has now fallen off, and it might be the grossest thing I've ever been sent on a text in my life. How's that toe today, Dino?
It's good, but it doesn't fall off, Donnie. Like
you got to pull
it. You make it sound like it just falls off, like all pretty.
How long did it take you to pick that off?
I got to dig.
Yeah.
It's an ugly situation, but it's happened. Like, no kidding. Like, I'm not even exaggerating. Probably the early 90s it started every May because, you're banging your toe when you land, and I must have landed hard, and I bang that toe into the end of the cleat, and it just would, by the end of May, my toe would be purple, and the toenail, I'd have to get rid of it because it would be so painful. And that went until 2015. Like, every year, I lost my big toenail on my left foot. So after our fiasco the other night, of course, I'm just wearing running shoes, which blew a hole in every side of it. Yeah, there's a picture of it. Isn't that sweet?
Check your phone, Dougie. I just sent you the picture.
Yeah. If you feel like throwing up, yeah, go ahead and have a look.
But it's, I had to dig it out the other day because it was just too painful to walk around. And so
Dougie, you got the picture.
Yeah. I'm not the only pitcher that goes through that. I'm sure there must be many, 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 many that have the same thing every year and know what I'm talking about. That's why pitchers are a little tougher than everybody else.
So, Dino, does it feel better now that the nail's now gone?
Oh, it's amazing.
So, all our pitchers who do get that toe issue, and you got to get that off. I know it's not pleasant.
Get it off.
Get some polysporin, bite a block of wood, and get it off.
Yeah, I would recommend. I'd recommend going to a doctor to get them to take it off. Like I just called myself a doctor from self, practice over the years. But I would probably, don't want to tell people to just start ripping their toenails off.
No, good point, Dean. Maybe let a medical professional have a look, see. Because you look like you need medical help right now. Like that you got to cover that up, Dean.
No, it's great. I just threw a little antiseptic on there. And
a little polysporin, good for you.
Yeah.
Let the air get to it, yeah. And now you'll be fancy free out there, you know?
222s, we're always trying to add programs and things that, we do lots of different things that we hadn't done 6 years ago. Maybe toenail removal is is part of that.
Well, it's a service you can provide for sure that is needed, yeah.
Would just like to add, we need a disclaimer that Dino is not a podiatrist. No. Please do not try this at home. Yeah. Oh my God, it's disgusting. Yeah. Disgusting. Okay, Dougie. So back to the goal at hand. So you've got you're going into your kind of identification process right now, and then into the qualification. Now, where do you think you're going to end up? But like, if you have a general idea of where the talent is, because you've been involved with the senior team, and then maybe. Can you look into the crystal ball here down the road a year and a half? What's our chances?
Well, I mean, for me right now, I haven't seen the guys, but I mean, based on everything that I know and heard the feedback that I've heard from others, and just basically whether it's Team Canada competing in a tournament, I don't expect us to not have success. So at this point, I expect that the coaches are going to be able to put something together that's going to develop a successful program. We'll get a real good feel for after the qualifier. I believe the top five teams will qualify the qualifier this fall in Colombia. Then I'll have a really good handle on it. I'd be able to answer that question a little bit better because then I'll have seen some of the talent. But for now, I mean, being Team Canada, I have nothing but podium expectations for us. And I want that to be our approach and our mindset as we go into it. So it's a little bit hard for me to gauge if where we really stand. Dean and I and Mark will be able to figure that out probably after Columbia.
Right.
Get a better understanding.
And was Mark on that staff? Like, because that Worlds would have been in Midland. That would have been two Worlds ago, correct? So was Mark on that staff then too? I can't remember.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the things that we're going to be doing here in the course of the next couple of weeks is meeting with the past junior team coaches just to get a little bit of feedback on the athletes and just kind of see where they were. Who were some of the ones that they potentially, you know, that were on the borderline of making the team, so we can make sure that they're identified as well, because those could be some of the athletes who could be making a big big growth.
Where did they, I can't remember, where did they finish? They medaled.
Third and fourth.
Third in Midland,
right? And fourth in TA.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Again, if you need Columbia, if you want Tosh and I to come, I speak a little Spanish too. That could be helpful.
Stop.
Okay. Second, I know you asked Tosh. Are you gonna, when you go to Columbia, are you gonna get a chance to see? I know Japan, Argentina, New Zealand. You guys are all, you know, in that mix. For it's tough to have a ranking system when no one's really put their team together. But are you gonna get a chance to see any of those other clubs in Columbia?
I don't believe so. I believe it's in America's
qualifier,
so we won't see. We won't see the other folks from, you know, the other parts of the country or the world. So, we'll have to wait and see what the feedback we get from the other information we get from, you know, folks in New Zealand and Australia and other countries. So Japan's always a dark horse. We don't really get a lot of intel on them. We do know they've had some success in the last few years. So saw them at the last 2 years. So they're always a strong squad.
And Argentina hosting, you got to imagine that helps them a little bit. Obviously, it helps Canada every time we're on home soil, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so and I don't know the exact location in Argentina yet, but, having it on your home soil is obviously a distinct advantage.
I would think so. So, I guess then, good luck. If you don't need Tosh and I, just know we're here. But we're going to get into...
I appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet. I'd be remiss if I didn't plug that one more time. We're going to get into... We're at an hour, if you can believe it. So we're going to get into parting shots. Normally, we let you go first, but I'd like to maybe hear from Dino first.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's a curveball, Dino. I threw it at you. But
I know why. Tosh has already sent you something here.
No, I haven't.
You guys are ganging up.
No, you're in the bunker, and you've been out of the public eye for the last 4 or 5 days.
So you're like Howard Hughes. He's hiding his penthouse.
Howard Hughes. That's a great analogy.
Just peeing into mayonnaise jars.
I am so reading through this. But I'd be an idiot, you know, to get all over my head coach right away. So I'm not going to do an actual... dig yet.
You don't have to dig him. You can dig us, too. That's fine. Or you can just say something nice. There's nothing wrong with
that. Yeah, well, I'm going to thank Dougie for coming on. I can't actually wait. This is going to be an amazing opportunity to, something new. Really excited with the potential to coach with Dougie. And I've done it in the past, and that was why it was a real easy decision to stay on as an assistant coach. I put in for the head coach as well, and I think the decision to have Dougie be the head coach is absolutely fantastic. I'm excited for it. Whether, you know, just being part of that staff is going to be a real big thing, I want to thank Dougie for coming on and sharing with us, and it's good to always reminisce and talk about the old Squamish, you know, lower mainland days, and I appreciate him coming on, and I look forward to working with you in the future. It's going to be great. It's going to be my new texty buddy every day now.
Very professional, Dino. Very good.
Yeah.
Sensational, buddy. Okay, Tosh, you want to go?
You want me to go now?
Well, let's go to, you know, Doug, you go. You've had a chance.
Oh, here we go. This is rigged. This is so rigged. It's not even funny. They can't even get it straight themselves, Doug.
Maybe that's a smokescreen. It looks like we're unorganized, but maybe we're not.
Let's see. Yeah.
Crazy like a fox.
Mm-hmm.
That's dumb like a fox.
I really don't have any parting shot. I just want to say thanks for having me, guys. And I think anytime any of us gets the opportunity to represent our country, it's obviously a huge honor. And I mean, having for me, it's you get those once in a lifetime opportunities, and this is one. I think after you invest your considerable part of your life in the sport, and you get the opportunity to do something like this, along with great folks all the way from having Dean as an assistant coach, Mark as an assistant coach, the other coaches, the administration for Softball Canada. I mean, everybody in the program has been awesome. It's been, even going through the interview process, it was an awesome process. everything is everything's been great, and I'm really looking forward to the next steps on this. So I wish I could give you a better parting shot, and I probably took a little bit of one at John, but earlier on when I passed judgment on him, but I we became really good friends on that, and so yeah, I don't really have a parting shot. Just want to say thank you to you guys for that for the opportunity.
Right on.
You bet.
My turn?
Yeah, your turn.
I'll go.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like you didn't
Dougie,
know.
Dougie, it was awesome having you on, and good luck, bud. Yeah. No.
No.
No, I think I talked about it. I think it's awesome that there's that coaching progression in there, and I will pump his tires a little bit here. I think you got a good one in Dino, obviously. I think any time that you can add someone to your staff that has a knowledge and experience, not only at the position, but at the national team level, right? Like, you know, we've talked a lot about Dino's heart and his drive and his will to win. And I think that is going to rub off on your pitching staff for sure. And I think, you know, he's been there, done that. So, you know, if there's a visit to the circle, if there's a word in the bullpen, you know, probably no better guy that, to come from him, because I think he's got a ton of experience to add to that. Obviously the lack of applicants for the assistant coaching job probably helped him out a little bit.
Here it is.
But you know,
there's the back end.
But regardless of that, I think you know, he is going to add a bunch to your staff, probably by default. But I think that he's done a very good job of being an assistant coach. I think an assistant coach is very supportive of the head coach, and I've been very, very lucky to have some amazing coaches on staffs that I've been with in the junior women's program. Very supportive. Just a couple notes here. Dougie is a gamer and a battler, and Dougie was a really good hitter. I don't think I've seen tires pump like that in a long time. So Dino did a really good job of making you feel special on this cast. So really good with that. One shot at Blackjack too, because he did get brought up, and I did write the comment down. Can you imagine Ricky Smith on how many times he lost his marbles when the catcher couldn't catch the third strike? There would have been meltdown, right? He would have been throwing at the on-deck batter. He would have been so upset. Right?
Yeah.
He probably had a beating stick.
But in true Ricky fashion, he would have been no problem throwing at hitters because he didn't bat
Never
himself.
Hit. Yeah.
So he didn't have to worry about that. There's a shot at Blackjack. But anyways, Doug, it was awesome having you on. I really wish you guys the best of luck. I know you're gonna have a great staff, and I you know, of little what I know about the athletes that are gonna be in the mix for that. I think you got a good group, especially out of the Saskatoon area. I know those kids pretty well, and I think you got a really good group there. So all the best, and bring it back, bud.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Hey, Doug, I just want to say thanks again, too. Obviously, it's nice to hear from you and what's going to happen with Team Canada. I think it's a great program and a great step to go into the national team. My shot actually is sort of at Dean, but it's more, I'm going to, and hear me out, Dean. It was going to be about your toe. We all talked about your heart. We all talked about everything you bring. But do you know the difference between sympathy and empathy, Dino?
No way he knows. No way he knows.
I know the similarities.
Sympathy is feeling bad for someone, and empathy is feeling bad with someone. And I, too, have had hamburger toe for several years, and it's a terrible, terrible feeling. And I want you to know that, Dean, I feel with you. It's a terrible feeling, and I'm proud of you for getting out there, gutting it out, yanking the toenail off.
Hamburger toe.
That's all I can call it.
That's awesome.
I got Fred Flintstone feet. It's so gross. But Dino, you're tough as nails, and the nail is a pun direct, 100%.
Oh, that
all
was
right.
good.
Awesome. That.
Awesome okay. job.
All right, boys, that's another one.
Say goodnight, Donnie.
Goodnight.
Thanks for listening to Tues Talk. New episodes weekly on Tuesdays. For more info, visit myloydminsternow.com or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.